Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Sexual Healing Podcast. If this is your first time, welcome in, and we're glad you're with us. I am one of your co-hosts, Dr. Pookie, and at my side always
Dark Boy
is
right here.
Dark Boy, yeah. Okay. Now, one of these days, Mr. Dark Boy is going to return, but for now, we'll accept his hiatus. All right. So, on the Sexual Healing Podcast, we talk about all aspects of life from our perspective as two black gay men in our 40s. And I believe one of us is approaching the downside of the 40s within the next month, but we're not going to get into all that just yet.
It's not me. I just had my...
See, you didn't have to go there. It's like, you did not have to
But like
take
you said
there.
To me, you're still in your midst, You'll still be in your midst.
I'm still in my midst, but I'll be hitting 46 this end of the month, so I've climbed the hill of the 40s, and now I'm beginning the descent.
To 50.
I'm hoping.
Down the descent to 50?
Yes. Well, I'm hoping that, you know, the descent is not nearly as tragic as it could be, and, you know, hanging in. But I feel like I will do my 50s in fabulous enough ways. You know, who knows? I might even find me a little man and get married by
then. A little man or a big man?
We'll see. You know what? I like the big ones, but the little ones love me.
Oh, yes.
So,
the fire hydrants like, you talk about?
Yeah, the fire hydrants love me. They be about as wide as me and, you know.
As short as, you know.
A good 6, 7, 8 inches shorter. So, hey. But they are adorable, and, you know, I like me a little short, thick man. I'm not going to disqualify him because he's short.
Okay.
But, yeah. But, okay. But how was your week, Dark Boy?
It was good. Not eventful, I suppose. You know, the normal stuff every week. Nothing really stood out. So it was kind of a easygoing week, which I like. No big drama, no big upset, no big, you know, big issue I have to take care of. So it was a quiet week, which I appreciate. Yours?
Okay.
You recovered from Boston yet?
Oh, gosh. I you know, this is my first week post-Boston. And, oh, God, I was exhausted. I actually ended up taking the weekend, which is, you know, now we're recording on Sunday this week, and I basically have been a bump on a log on the couch, on my bed, catching up on all my shows that I didn't get to watch while I was in Boston, because a lot of things premiered, their fall seasons kicked in again. I also got to sit down and watch, you know, two of my guilty pleasures, the first being Marriage Boot Camp Reality Stars with that crazy ass Mama D and Ernest. Oh,
I haven't
God.
Seen that one yet.
Mama D from Love and Hip Hop Hollywood, not Hollywood, Atlanta. She's crazy, you know, but it's interesting to see we're starting to see a somewhat softer side of Mama D, but she's still a gangster. So I got my holla at that foolishness, and then I watched the season finale of Braxton Family Values. Ooh, it was delicious. Iyanla and Tamar going at it.
That might be good to see.
And then Mama Evelyn. Ooh, you might want to check that out. That shit was high theater.
I don't really even like Iyanla, to be honest, but that's a whole other thing. But I don't like her herself.
Well, yeah. You don't like Iyanla? Is it on principle, or she just doesn't appeal to me?
I think she's probably helping people, but I can only take so much of her, and I was like, okay, enough. She was on this last episode of Greenleaf, too. I'm like, okay, I've had enough already.
Yeah, well, you know, she pulled out Not On My Watch again, which had me hollering. Although she did that in the episode from last week. but, yeah, she... Well, you know, Tamar Braxton is a handful. And even Tamar's mama had to jam her up. Like, you gonna respect Miss Iyanla. You wasn't raised like this. And I said, oh, shit. And she's like, say one more word. And I got you.
Okay.
And I said, what you gonna do to her, Lady Evelyn? So, yeah, that... you know, that woke me up a little bit last night. Yeah, and my Hurricanes won yesterday. They squeaked out a scintillating victory over Florida State University. They had me depressed for a minute, but yeah. So, I am recovering from Boston. It was a week of 16 to 18 hour days. My sleep was all over the place. Had some, you know, situations where we had lunch that was scheduled to be an hour and change, and because we were behind schedule with interviews, I may have gotten, like 20 minutes.
So what, a couple bites?
Basically, yeah. I mean, I finished my little salad, but I was walking and eating my little blondie. Because I said, ooh, these are gooey. I must have one. So, yeah. But it was good. You know, it was righteous work. It was important work, but God, I was tired. Physically, emotionally, just more spent than I've ever been. And, you know, it took a minute to kind of get back. So I'm happy I was able to see my therapist yesterday or day before, because I needed to talk to him. So I was just like, wow, I feel this way. And it's just like, he's like, why are you asking me? It's like, I could ask you questions, but you already know how to get to it. Why do you feel this way? He's like, I can call you on your bullshit, but do you really need me to guide you to why you're feeling the way you feel? And I said, oh, well, damn, you know. So I had to sit there and I just kind of said, okay, well, and we got into it. So I love my therapist, although he snatches my wig off.
Okay, well, that's what he's supposed to do.
You know. Yeah, to help. He is. And help, but I mean, I walked out of there. Yeah, I mean, I walked out of there Friday bald and bleeding. So it was just, you know, there was only so much he could do. It was just, yeah, it was one of those sessions where I was like, I think I need a second hour. But his next client was waiting in the lobby or in, you know, in the waiting room. So, yeah, she looked at me like, oh, y'all ran a little long. I said, I know, girl, we did. Because I kept looking at him like, are we really going to go into this right now? Because normally, you know, at about this time, you really start to wind it down. And I guess he could just sense that I was struggling. So he just said, let's get into this. But he got 5 minutes, you know. And yeah, so he gave me what I needed to continue the work after. Because it is a collaborative relationship. It is not for him to fix me per se. It's for him to guide me through processes and through struggles and opening up boxes that I'd rather not deal with. But said boxes are holding me back, if not terrorizing me. So there you have it. But yeah, it was a rough week in short, and you already heard the long. So yeah. And lots of meetings when I came back. Just ran into a buzzsaw. I was like, shit. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, the first week of the month are meetings for me. Depending on how it falls, it could be the first or the second week. So, but yeah, so let's move it forward. I know we're trying to do an hour episode, which is hilarious, but we'll try.
We always try.
We try. We often fail.
Yeah.
But we try. It's like, but okay, so let's get into our blacklist.
Yes, so this, our blacklist is always our list of black things we either love or hate. Most of the time, it's stuff we love, though. So it's our favorites. And this week, we always do it in 3-2-1, you know, one obviously being our number one. And so this week, we decided to list out our favorite black male porn stars.
Yeah, because this is a very porny episode.
Yes, it is. So I thought, well, you know, how fitting for it, you know, perfect episode to have this this blacklist. So you want me to go first?
Sure, if you're feeling froggy.
So my first, or number three for me, is Mr. Bo Banks.
Mr. who?
Bo Banks. Yes. Oh. Now, I've only recently discovered him.
Yes.
And actually,
because of controversy.
You'll hear about him probably later on this episode. But I do mm-hmm. like, I mean, outside of the way that he looks, but I do like that he's willing to speak up. You know, he's not afraid. He's not, you know, hiding in the corner. You know, he's speaking up about, mm-hmm. you know, his experiences in the porn industry. So I appreciate that.
It's true.
Sometimes I can appreciate when somebody kind of steps out of the bounds a little bit. And it's not afraid mm-hmm. to maybe take a little bit of heat for something that they feel, you know, feel strongly about, or something that, that's, you know, that they're experiencing. So he's my number three.
Okay. Yeah, he put Lil Kaepernick on.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely shook the card a little bit. Yes. It'd be curious to see how well he does against the machine, though.
Yeah, he may kind of have a little bit of downtime, we'll say, and then may come back in a little while. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I've not seen any of Mr. Banks' work, but I did see a couple of pictures of him and, you know, in some articles that I read and said, okay, I was not aware of him. I was aware of the other Bo Banks, who is probably Latino, maybe? White Latino?
Yeah, see, and I don't know that one.
He kind of looks like... Yeah, he's... Oh, no, I'm thinking of Boomer Banks. Goodness, okay. I'm tripping. Yeah. It's the only Banks I know about. Other than Tony, Black Gay Bear, director, rapper extraordinaire. Shout out to you, brother. Those are the only Banks I know of. Okay. So, yeah.
You're number three.
Okay. My number three is a favorite. He goes by the name of Ray Diesel. And if you saw a picture of him, you'd know why. Okay. I like
I have not.
It's like, yeah, he's, you know, he's a...
He's tall. He's,
I don't know how old... He is probably tall, yeah. I don't know how old he is, but he certainly looks like he's on the other side of 30 at the very least. You know, got a little body on him, hairy chest.
Okay.
All sorts of dick. It's just outrageous. And sometimes he has a nice close crop beard, you know. Very handsome. I do like Ray.
Okay.
Yeah, he's my number three. So who is your... I know you haven't seen his stuff, so maybe I'll send you a link or two so you can check it out. Yeah, because he be wearing the boys out. He be wearing them out now. Yeah.
My number two is... Now, a lot of these people... They're still new to me because I don't really watch too much of the, I don't want to say traditional porn anymore. Mostly what I see is on Tumblr. But there is a guy, and his name is very creative. It's, and I don't know if it's his real name or not. I don't think so, but it's Blair Everwood.
Blair Everwood?
I'll try to send you a picture of him, but. The part that I think is really creative, well, I think in most of his movies, he's mostly a top. You know, he's just, you know, wearing the boys out, whatever.
Well, yeah, with that name,
but
you know.
I think the reason why he chose that, that's why I don't know if it's his real name or not, because there was a picture that I saw where he resembles Blair Underwood.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, did he choose this name to kind of, you know, market himself because he kind of has that resemblance to Blair Underwood. So Blair Everwood, I mean, Everwood fits the porn, you know, so it's just like, okay, you know. I'll send you a picture.
Oh, okay. I see a thing of here, Blair Everwood breeds Japan.
Yes.
Okay, not the best picture of him.
Yeah, that one doesn't really have, like I said, with the picture I have, I will send it to you. I don't have it handy now to send it to you now.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah, if he does look like Blair Underwood, that's a nice look.
Okay.
Well, I will check out Mr. Underwood's work. Oh, I'm sorry, Everwood. See? Everwood. So I'm guessing the dick stays hard at all times.
Yes.
Forever.
All right. Number two.
Okay. So my number two is a brother by the name of Big Beef. He does a lot of his work with black breeders, and the beef is quite big, and he also wears some boys out with it. Actually, I mean, on Black Breeders, it's not a lot of boys. It's some grown-ass men on there, and he'd be wearing the men out. And on occasion, he takes some dick, okay. And, you know, he definitely excels at slinging dick than he does taking it. So, yeah, he, you know. Although it's actually kind of cool to watch him take some dick, because you'd be like, uh-huh, now you know what you be doing
now
to
he's
the boys.
Now, he's a big guy, though. I mean, like a...
Yeah, he has a thicker build. He's not overly muscular. He's just below dad bod. You know, he's not quite at that dad bod level, you know. And depending on when you see him, he might look like he spent a little time at the gym, but he has a little bit of belly. He just looks like a regular guy with just like a massive penis. But the bald head, you know, not the best looking brother in the face, but he's not ugly. He worked for me. I mean, he does not have what a lot of folks would call a husband dick, because it's some work to take that motherfucker, but you know.
Okay, well, with a name like that, you know.
I think he lives up to it. I think
you have some idea of what you're getting into.
Oh, yeah. I think he's a Southern boy, too. I think he's in Tennessee or something like that. Yeah.
Or what's getting put into you.
Yeah, I heard an interview once with him on what was the name of that show? It was part of Poppy Chulo Radio. Poppy Chulo used to interview porn stars, and I forget the name of the show.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was actually a really cool show. I don't think he's doing it anymore, but he's trying to build the empire. So, you know, if you want to check out some. You know, some interesting content, you know, featuring black, gay, lesbian, bi, trans folk of color. Definitely check out poppychuloradio.com. They have a lot of different shows and programming, including like TV show recaps. So, you know, I don't know what they're doing over there now, but they used to be a thriving network. So, yeah, but okay. But who is your number one? Trying to keep this list going quickly.
Yeah. My number one is a guy by the name of Phoenix Fellington.
I've heard of him.
Yeah. He's again, I don't know how new he is. I've only just recently started seeing him. And part of what I like about him, well, he's versatile. I mean, he's like a thinner build guy. I mean, he's not he's not super, super muscular. But I've seen him in videos where he's given the dick and he's taking it.
Okay, and, so he's a pro.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm trying to, like I think I mentioned before, I'm trying to get over this thing where, you know, certain people can't take dick or whatever. Like, you know, if you're marketed as a top, then you should never, you know, then it's so rare. And what I like is that he's both. I've seen videos of both, and it seems like he's good at both, so that's why he's number one.
Okay, yeah, I'm actually opening up his Twitter page to see. Well, yeah, he does have a nice little body on him, although his head is cut off. Oh my. Okay, the dick is quite glorious.
Yeah, but like I said, he's been taking dick too.
Yeah, he can. Okay, that's a nice. Why am I not? I'm seeing. Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Phoenix is something else. Okay, he looks like he's on the young side.
Yes,
got his little choker beard and or chin strap beard is what they call it. Yeah, he's laying up in his bed with his legs thrown up. I'm like, all right. Okay. And damn, somebody said, damn, are you single? And he wrote back, as fuck. It's like, all right. Okay. Ooh. All righty, Phoenix. I have to check out some of his work.
Yes.
He is on he's on Pornhub, so okay. And he has some interesting followers as well on Twitter. Okay.
Your number one.
My number one is so me, although his body is pretty smooth, but he goes by the name of Cutler X.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, Mr. 11x7. Good lord. And again, he be wearing the boys out. But I appreciate his work because he goes from like, he will like fuck you down passionately. Like, and he'll be coaching you through the shit. You know, you'd be like, ooh. It's just like, be like, you know, that man is very uncomfortable right now, but he's like, just lay there, just breathe, just take that. I was like, oh, it's a mess. I'd be sitting there like, oh, is that how you do that? Because that man looks like he's in a bit of discomfort, you know, and it's just, ooh. But yeah, I've not seen anyone holla cut on him yet, so. But yeah. But okay. All right, for the Phoenix Fellington and good old Cutler. Yeah. Because yeah. I had some honorable mentions as well, because, you know, I always have such a hard time narrowing it down to three. One of mine was Mr. Buck, who, again, is... He's an interesting character. He definitely gives you a lot of daddy vibes, although he's probably in his late 20s. But he just has that daddy thing about him. And then also, a true daddy is Tancredo Buff, or Tancredo. He's like a... at the very least, Puerto Rican, if not Latino, maybe. But he's an older gentleman. Versatile. Can throw some nice dick. Can take some dick. Does, you know, he's an interesting guy. I think I was, before I ever saw him, I heard an interview with him. And I was like, oh, this seems like a really interesting guy. And when I saw some of his work, I said, okay, he ain't bad looking. And he a stone cold freak. And I appreciate that, the man. So, yeah. Okay, so... Let us slide into our main topic for the day, which is racism and gay porn.
Yes.
And other shenanigans.
That was a perfect segue. You know, that's why we chose that blacklist.
Yeah, the blacklist came after the topic. But we did do a little homework. Was there anything that emerged for you in the homework?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of articles about it, which I actually was kind of surprised about. I mean, maybe I shouldn't have been, because in my mind, I'm thinking that it's kind of an unspoken thing. It's there. There's racism. It's there. People know about it, but they're not willing to talk about it. But there are more people willing to talk about than I thought. So not that it's just good to just be talking about it, but at least people, there's some discussion of it.
Yeah, to me, you know, the interesting thing about gay porn and why I thought it was interesting to discuss it on this show is because gay porn is almost at that age where Hollywood was 60, 70 years ago, where all we could be were thugs and maids and, you know, all these kind of these stereotypes. Yeah, and prisoners, you know. And it seems like, I know for me, as a porn connoisseur growing up, I was not a thug. And so a lot of the thug porn that you saw, like, there was just this era where you had a couple of black studios like Black Forest and the like that just had regular guys. And they just were who they were. There wasn't a whole lot of dress up going on and giving off this vibe and that vibe. They were just who they were, you know, Gene Lamar, Randy Cochran, the classics, the legends, you know. Yeah, so you had some of those guys, you know, like Gene Lamar could take a mean dick, like, Lord, that brother, you know. But he was like a father of like two, and I don't know if he identified as gay or not, or if it was just the job. But more than anything, they were just regular guys when I was growing up. I think successive generations have definitely seen the rise of, you know, the thug porn, so to speak. And I recognize people are trying to make their money.
Yeah, they are.
But
on both sides. You know,
exactly.
In front of the camera and behind the camera.
And that's what makes the whole noir controversy so interesting, which, you know, I'll be bringing up a little later. But for a lot of us, gay porn is rather instructional about, well, what is, you know, what are you doing with another man, and how do you do it? And I mean, porn on its own can be a little reckless, because not everybody's asshole is open like that. You know, you don't just get to slide in there like that. You know, there's some work that goes on with those gentlemen before the camera rolls. You know, and you never see anybody, you know, giving it a good rinse, but we know it's been rinsed, you know, because there are no accidents on the set, at least not that you see.
Yeah.
No painted sheets, no painted couches. But just this idea of really aggressiveness with the sex, and it just, you know, for a lot of folks, it just painted this picture of black men as extremely aggressive, and that was problematic to me. And it also played on the thug.
Was it problematic for you, or just, okay, yeah.
To me, it was problematic. I think at a certain point of consciousness, I was like, yeah, this is really problematic, but also I couldn't identify with the whole generation of porn, because I was like, that's not me. I don't necessarily require a gentle lover, so to speak. So I can appreciate some aggressiveness in a man, but that it was just
that was all there was.
Yeah, and it was just N-word this, N-word that, and just it was a lot. And unfortunately, we're not the only ones as black folk consuming it. You also had a lot of white folks and other people consuming it, and they formed ideas about us and how we have sex, and whether it was a misconception or it was an expectation that a lot of them developed. The BBC, the big black cock era, and we're still in that.
I don't know if that era's ended.
It hasn't. I mean, it's actually kind of leapt off the screen now, where you do have folks that are demanding, you know. I mean, they'll walk up to you in a club, be like, you know, I want to ride your big black cock. You're just like, hello. You're never going to see my dick. it's just like, if that's how you greet me, you're never going to see my dick. And even if I'm horny as hell, I'm going elsewhere.
That would be a big turnoff right there, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, there are guys out there that feel like that's perfectly okay. And I mean, and so it's like, it's basically, I think in some of the things we read, they were talking about, you know, objectification and the idea that I'm just a dick to them. Something to ride, you know, and ride rough and put away wet, so to speak. And, you know, they'll fuck me, but they don't want to date me. They don't want to be seen in public with me.
Yeah.
And I mean, you obviously have that not just with black men in general. You have that with men that are more on the effeminate end of the scale in terms of masculine representation. You have that with men that are perhaps heavier. You have that with men who are older, you know, so it's everything feeds off of this ideal of the younger, trim body, perhaps, you know, gym built. The more you get away from that, the more invisible you kind of become. And the problem is that the only image you do get to see is
aggressive,
the big, you know. Yeah, the Mandingo. And again, nothing wrong with a good Mandingo. You know, it's like we all need a Mandingo
There's
in our lives.
There's a porn guy out there that calls himself Mandingo. Obviously not the one from way back, but...
Yeah, there have been a couple of Mandingos throughout history. The new one, I can't think of anything he's done. But, But, you know, you got to be bold to come out with that name nowadays.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Got to live up to it.
Yeah, because there's a history with that name.
Yeah. Well, and I think the thing that really bothered me is that going back to the younger folks that are growing up in this era of thug porn, and it's kind of like it suggests to them that this is who you have to be, or you're just not desired. I mean, it doesn't allow a lot of space for you to just be a regular guy. It doesn't allow much space for you to be a more quote unquote femme leaning guy. You know, you got to change your voice. You got to dress a certain way. And if you don't do those things, you're invisible to folks that aren't black, and you're kind of looked down upon by a good number of folks who are black. Especially the younger ones, because they're going after what they know. And I've talked to enough younger black gay men to to be like, okay, so this is not just some sort of thing that us old hoes have put out there. Like, y'all really are feeling like
the new
this.
Ones. Yeah, the new ones got it. Well, I say new ones, yeah. The younger ones.
Yeah, they're really kind of feeling that pressure, and it's kind of feeding into the eating disorders and things like that, which, you know, we don't talk about. But which is, it's fascinating because so much of Black culture is built around food. But then you have this group of young men that are just like, oh no, I can't eat. You know, I gotta keep it. You know, I gotta keep my six pack, or I gotta, you know, if I have a slim build, I gotta remain twinkish. And it's to be consumed, as opposed to, I don't know. This might be Pollyanna on my part, but just their humanity to be acknowledged and celebrated. I feel like they deserve that, and a lot of our Black men are not getting it. And it's not to say that porn is responsible for all of it, because it's not.
No, it's not.
But it's an offshoot of it. I mean, and
it's probably like it's a symptom of, you know, what's going on.
Oh,
greater society, I think, or a symptom. Oh, or yeah. I don't know if that's the right word, but.
Oh, no, it's definitely indicative of what's going on in the streets, I mean, and in the clubs and every place else. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, this is not foreign, you know, this is not new. So, I don't know, it's strange, but, yeah,
you know,
go figure.
One thing that I, and I, you know, I didn't really think about it, I didn't really, I mean, it's the issue, the racism in porn doesn't just apply to Black men.
No.
One, and I mean, I knew that, but I just, you know, I needed to see examples, or, you know, and so I did not really realize it, but a lot of times the Asians that are in porn, they are, I think the article I read said they're feminized, you know,
mm-hmm.
They are made to be the bottom or the receptive one or submissive one. There's never anybody that's put kind of like in a, I don't know what you call it, like authoritative or just kind of like, you know, more of aggressive role, kind of what they're doing to the black guys. There's nobody that's in that position in Asian, with the Asian guys.
Yeah.
And it's still that same thing, oh, that Asians are supposed to be supposedly smaller, weaker, whatever. So it's that same thing going on. And like I said, I didn't realize that, you know, it just didn't occur to me. I guess I should have, but I just didn't occur to me. It's like, oh yeah, it's happening to them too. It's just the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically taking these different men of color and casting them into white fantasy roles. You know, they can't just be...
Or white perceptions, or...
Exactly. I mean, yeah. They are fulfilling white men's fantasies. That's... As opposed to being allowed to be themselves. I remember, you know, now that you mention Asian men, one of my roommates from college, Asian guy, perhaps he's listening, I don't know. He's a very busy person, so... And we were watching some porn flick way back in the day. I think it was from the 80s. It was called, Below the Belt. It was kind of like a martial arts kind of take on things. And there was a scene where they had, it was like a fantasy scene as well, where they had like Chad Douglas. I don't know if you remember Chad. He was big
that
dick.
That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, he looked older. I don't know how old he was. He was probably in his mid-30s. Could have been late 20s when he was recording, but he had the mustache and had a little bit of a mullet. Not hardcore mullet, but you could tell it was mullet-like. But he had a very large dick, and he was always, you know, he was trade, at least on screen. And so there was a scene in there where it was like he was the dojo master, the karate instructor, and there were this scene where you had these quote-unquote ninjas attack his karate studio, and he fended all of them off, and I think he captured one, and of course he just fucks the boy senseless. And you know, the guy was Asian, and he was the only Asian guy I had seen in a movie back during my college days.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah, I definitely not going beyond one hand of Asian men that I've seen in any of the porn from back in the late 80s into the early 90s that I recall. But the thing that was interesting was, you know, there were about a group of maybe six or seven of us sitting there watching this and just hanging out. And we were all just like, oh my God. Like, it was just really, it was like this little itty bitty man taking all of his dick and just, you know, hooping and just, it was a struggle. And it was, the visuals of it were absurd. So it was kind of funny, so to speak, in that way. We're just like, this is absurd. What the hell? You know, and he was clearly being dominated. Just, you know, I think he was even tied up and was just getting, you know, just pounded. And I looked over at my roommate and dear friend, and, you know, and he was just really mortified. And it was at that moment, I was just like, oh, wow. You are a piece of shit, first of all. You know, like, that you're finding this funny, because this is not funny to this guy. You know, my friend could have easily been on that screen in terms of build and all that. And it was just like, wow, okay, this is hardcore fetish material. This is hardcore something. Right. I was like, wow, this is the first time I've seen an Asian man on screen having sex in this way, and he is basically just like, he's not even there. He's like a sex toy.
Yeah.
And I mean, and then you think about, in the gay community, you have this image of Asian men that are supposed to be, they're perceived, I'll put it that way, as more docile.
Yes.
They're expected to be docile, whether it's because of their demeanor or because of their appearance, and, you know, other people tend to be larger than them, blah, 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 and all this other bullshit. You know, and it's just, you see that played out on screen. Oh my, is that the dog?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't think you could hear that.
Oh wow, I very seldom hear him when we're recording. I know he's making noise all the time, but that's the first time I've really heard him. Hello, Roscoe, good morning.
He's not even in the same room with me, but...
I know, he's like, where is my dad?
Yeah.
I'm like, go bother the other daddy, you know, unless he's out eating. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see that and then realize, oh, okay, so this is all playing out on the screen. And then I think there's one actor in more current times. I can't think of his name, but he's like, whenever he's actually topped on screen, they have made a big deal of it. Like it's noteworthy. And I'm just like, wow, can he not, like, it's weird. It's almost, I mean, it's porn. So let's just clear that up. It's all about fetish.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I get that. But I think when you do this in this context and you have folks watching that are trying to figure out the identity and all that good stuff, I guess the question is, porn responsible for helping folks figure this stuff out? How much accountability are they supposed to have?
Well, Bo Banks.
Yes.
And he kind of, I mean, he says that it's, he thinks that it's the men of color, mm-hmm, to take responsibility in how they're representing, you know, how you're representing people, you know. He's saying, don't go to a low production company and reduce yourself to something you're not.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so from his point of view, he thinks, he puts it, I mean, it's, well, we all know it's still on the producers or whatever, but mm-hmm, he does say that the stars themselves have to, you know, take some responsibility too. I guess that's the way I take it anyway. So, I mean, I think, you know, He kept referring to, like, low production companies or whack-ass company. So, yeah. I, guessing it's the lower, from his point of view, I guess it's the you know, those kind of companies that are maybe putting more of this stuff out there.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I'm guessing. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you have like some of the top line A-list production houses. You know, you still got your Classic Falcon. You have your Titan Media is pretty high end. I would say Noir, which is the latest high end studio to come out. Those are really very production, very high level professional production, so to speak. Once upon a time, I remember reading about this, that the big discriminator between the all black porn and, you know, the more mainstream white porn was the sound quality.
Was what?
Sound quality.
Oh.
That, like, once upon a time, sound was the big discriminator between the really high-end studios and the low-budget ones. And so, and you would kind of see it when you'd have them looping in something like, oh, you know, let's have a phone ringing, you know, in the middle of the scene. And you're just like, okay. And then you'd have this loud-ass phone ringing. You know, it was just like it wasn't mixed very well. Because it was becoming less and less about the optics. You know, everybody's stuff looks good. It's different angles. Maybe the lighting could be it's a little difference in the lighting. But everyone's stuff looks good now. But it's still about the sound. Because that's a whole nother set of professionals you have to bring on the production team to make that work.
Yeah, so, if you don't have the money, if you barely have the money to get the thing going, you're not going to have all these other people.
Yes, I mean, you do have some production companies that are possibly headed by people of color that don't have the resources. Because, you know, the other thing is, most of it is being produced for the eyes of white gay men. So you're gonna present what they want to see. And I've not seen, well, yeah, I mean, you do have, there's a lot of hotel room porn out there, you know, that looks good, but it's still shot in a hotel because they don't have the budget to shoot anywhere else. Or they're just like, we're not, you know, our customer doesn't care about having a nice panoramic view. Yeah, they're just like, look, I want to see some dick, I want to see some ass, I want to see some lips, you know, and so on and so forth. But you do have this thing where you have white-owned production companies that are producing all black content. And those guys are being, you know, forced into certain roles. Because it was at Coco Dorm. I heard about that years ago, where a lot of people just assumed it was a black company. And it wasn't.
Ah.
And, you know, they had all these younger guys, you know, young black men in there, many of whom were not thugs per se, but they were basically having to portray them. They also, at a certain point, there started to be a push toward doing bareback porn. And some of the guys didn't want to, but did it anyway because it was survival.
They needed a paycheck?
Yeah, they needed a check. It was survival sex. I mean, it's still sex work. I mean, you can dress it up, but it's still sex work. And so they were having to engage in this. And then you had a whole thing where a number of those guys ended up HIV positive. And it was
I'm just going to ask that question. Like, did some of them end up HIV positive? So obviously, yeah.
Yeah, and I also remember there was a certain point where they had this whole thing where a number of people kind of came after this one brother that was part of the production cast, because, you know, he ended up positive, and then they saw all these people that he had been fucking raw.
Bear
and and they were like, well, you know, he probably just killed so and so. And I was like, whoa, I said, yeah, this is a grown man, there were decisions that he made, but it was also survival sex. And then when you find out you have white men pulling the strings on this and using their financial resources to enforce what they wanted, it's kind of like, can you really, it's like, yeah, this guy did this, he did it. Okay. You know, we'll call that what it is. But I don't know if you can give him all the blame. And I think it was, yeah, I mean, the whole Coco Dorm thing, and I think they're still around. I imagine they've cleaned up their act, but, because didn't they had a, they were in a whole lot of shit at one point. I think they had some, the neighbors that were not happy about them and their production going on the block.
Yeah, I may have heard about this.
Yeah, they had a whole lot of shit going on. And it was so interesting because, to me, I don't think the owners and the producers of that material caught the hell for it. It was always the actors. They were the ones getting harassed, and they were the ones, I think one of them got arrested or something like that. It's a whole lot of shit going on.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, you know, obviously it's business, so there is exploitation on every level. But it was just really... It just really rubbed me very raw in unfortunate ways. And I didn't consume much of Coco Dorm's material because I wasn't into the thug look.
They're still around.
Oh, they're still, yeah, I thought so.
They're still around.
Yeah, they were a cash cow. They made a lot of white men a lot of money. you know, and continue to do so. I don't know if, like, I think Dog Pound is black owned, and you do get guys in different roles. I don't know if Breed It Raw or Black Rain Productions is black owned. I think they may be, and they now have their subsidiary brands with, I can't think of the name of any of them, but they have some offshoot brands that are geared toward, you know, certain types and looks and things like that. So it is very interesting to kind of see how all of this kind of progresses. But I often wonder about how is it impacting the on-screen talent, so to speak. So I don't know.
You know, one of the other things that I saw, the articles... There was a guy, Hugh, I think his name is Hugh Hunter, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah, the boycott.
Yeah, and I thought, okay, because, and I did not realize, he was kind of protesting, I guess he got nominated for an award
for the gay,
and he wanted all of his nominations withdrawn because they had a category called Best Ethnic Scene, which I didn't know that there was such a category.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, gosh, that just really shows. And this was 2017. This wasn't like it was 20 years ago. This is 2017 when this happened.
Yeah, this was last year.
Yeah, so I think it still goes to this thing where it's like, you know, we're there. They'll include us, but we're still separated somehow, and we're all bunched into one category and. You know, it's not right. Because then, I don't know. I don't know. I like that he did that. That he did kind of protest. Because again, it does bring more attention to racism in the gay community, or whatever. And you know, he's a white man, so I think sometimes people who need to hear that are going to hear it from somebody like them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're white, then you're gonna probably more likely to listen to a white person saying it than a black person saying it, even though it really isn't correct. It shouldn't be that way, but that's the way it is. So I give him credit for that. I'm not sure what's happened since then. I guess this was just back in November. So who knows if it's, well, that's almost a year ago. You know, is he not getting work now? Is he?
Or
is he fine?
He was probably still working. I don't know if any of the major studios are working with him, but you almost don't need him nowadays. I mean, because he's done... I've seen him in different things, and, you know, you never know when stuff was recorded, but I think he's still around. Yeah, he's not, you know, he's not a favorite of mine. I'm just, at a certain point, I get bored with the look that he has. You know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, a well-built older, you know, guy. I don't know how old Hugh really is. He's probably in his mid-30s, I would imagine, which is quote-unquote approaching daddy territory in a lot of porn. And, you know, but I know he's done some work with, what was it, Rocco Steel? He's done some work there and a couple of other boutique houses, so to speak. But, yeah, I don't know what... I remember that the Gavian Awards, they did kind of cancel the ethnic sex category and just put them all in to the larger best sex category or something like that. But I think the thing that was, and it's often the case, you didn't have very many actors of color that were nominated for much else. You know, you had like a ton of folks in this ethnic set. It was like, what, 15, 20 scenes or something like
together.
That? Yeah, and they just kind of all got dumped in there, and there were very few nominees of color in the other categories. And I have to think with the... If you're that intrigued by big black cocks, okay, and they are very proficient at what they do, and they give you a good scene, I don't understand why they can't get nominated for just best actor. They shouldn't need to be thrown into this best ethnic scene.
Sex category.
Yeah, I mean, I think about, you know, there are some men of color that are consistently working for a wide range of studios doing a whole lot of different shit. And I'm just like, if they're that popular, how is it they can't get a nomination? So are they not good, or is it just about the dick? Because, you
maybe.
Know, I think about a guy like Cutler X, and he's not a lot of people's cup of tea. You know, some people think he's just ugly. You know, he definitely has some features that, you know, in his face that don't work for everybody. But it shouldn't matter on that level, because I think he looks too black for some people. I think that's what it comes down to. Because he even said when he started out in the industry, he had to go overseas. He did his work. He started his career in Europe because no one would hire him here.
Oh.
And you think about
it. You may have told me that.
Yeah. We may have talked about him in a previous episode. Yeah. I mean, he was like 50 or 51, just starting out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, trim body. You know, he didn't have... He was in great shape, had a whole lot of dick. But he couldn't get a job over here. So he went overseas and he did a lot of work with Tim Tales. And that's how I discovered him. I was like, who is this brother? You know, it's like he a little rough in the face, but okay.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at pictures of him now. Yes, I...
Yeah, you kind of see where folks can be like, well, I don't know about him now. He's for
but
certain
to me,
tastes.
I don't think he's bad looking.
Exactly. You know, I'd be fine with him. You know, and... But it's that's the kind of thing, because I'm like, if it's all about the big black cock, why did this man have to go to Europe to work?
To get work.
So it's not just, it's like we have the bar for men of color, I would say in general, to get into any of the higher end studios is so high, it's ridiculous. And then if you don't match the look that they want, then you don't have a shot. And nice segue. This whole thing with this new studio coming out, well, they're already out now, called Noir, N-O-I-R. With who's it? Shishi LaRue is the director of, I think, all the content coming out of there thus far. And I think she's also part of the ownership group. They have taken some of our black stars that have done a lot of ethnic work, so to speak, for, you know, all ethnic scenes, those types of things. I think they've taken Knockout. I think he's done a lot of work for maybe Dog Pound. I'm not sure where Knockout has.
Okay.
But also Max Connor, who is actually, I just heard an interview with him on the Eat, Pray, Thought, THOT podcast.
Yeah.
Hilarious. That's one of my new shows. Like, that child is special, and he literally divides the show up into three segments, talking about eating, praying, and thought, you know, and thoughting. And he had an interview with Max Connor. It was actually his season opener, like maybe 3 weeks ago now. And Max was talking about, yeah, he used to be a professional actor. He did mainstream stuff. He was on a show. I can't remember what show it was, but when it was canceled, he was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he decided I want to do porn. So he started doing porn. So he was talking about working with Noir Studios and then somebody, you know, the host, oh gosh, Savoy, thank you. Oh, I cannot remember names nowadays. It's frightening. Savoy was saying, you know, why did Knockout have to change his name? And he's like, well, because that's not the brand. And they were like, but why can't he just be himself? And Max was like, I get what you're saying, but this studio is intentionally trying to take black men out of this thug role, so to speak, where they, okay, you know, and it initially, when all the stuff I saw from them looked like it was basically interracial porn. I was like, how is this any different? You got these very well hung black tops fucking these white guys. I don't understand how this is any different. But apparently there has been a more robust ad campaign before the launch of this that did have material that wasn't necessarily interracial, that it was men of color and having sex, but there are not a ton of men of color in their roster yet, because as Max had said, you know, not every guy can transition out of the porn, not out of the
main, or not mainstream, but
transition out of the thug aesthetic. You know, it's like, because you have a lot of brothers out there that are pretty tatted up, and their body language and all these things kind of feed that persona, and they're not able to transition to a more refined look, is basically what was being suggested. And so I found that very interesting. So I'm curious to see how that works out, because Savoy was like, why can't we have, you know, why can't so-and-so go over there and do work? And they were like, and Max is like, it's a different aesthetic. He's like, not everybody can do it. And it just struck me as really interesting. I appreciate that they are trying to showcase a more diverse image of black masculinity.
Yes, yes.
But it still rubs me a little, And I think maybe it's because it's coming from white folks. So they're still kind of boxing them into a certain thing. I'll be curious to see if someone like XL can make a transition to noir if he wants to. I don't know if he necessarily wants to. But that would be interesting to see whether he would be able to do that. And whether they, you know, welcome him in. So, I don't know.
Ooh, hey, goodness. one thing. Do you think, part of me thinks that this whole thing is still, I mean, we've talked before how so much of white culture, or I'm sorry, gay culture,
mm-hmm,
is focused on white first. And for me, this is just a continuation of that.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said at the beginning, they're several years behind, I guess, the way Hollywood was.
Mm-hmm. In some days, still is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, I just think it's kind of a continuation where it's just white first, and kind of catering maybe just to what white people want, and then
Yeah, I mean, it's, if you look at the sales, I mean, money talks. I think as a whole, gay men per capita, I won't say collectively because there are less of us than the other folks. Gay men per capita spend more money on porn and adult entertainment any given month than anyone else. With that in mind, the customer is going to dictate to you what it is they want. And the highest demand is going to dictate the most product. So you have white gay men out there that, you know, that like, you know, they want the gym built, they want the fantasy, they want their twink, you know. We're on the list, but we're not at the top of it. And I would even say the white men that are like legitimately attracted to black men. And I'm not even going to get into this whole idea of, oh, well, they're fetishizing black men because they only want one. It's, I think all sexual attraction is fetishization anyway. It just on a very basic level is. It's about whether or not once you get past the fetish and the window dressing of this person, do you actually appreciate who they are?
So, do you see them as a person?
Exactly. You know, or are they a sex object? You know, I've encountered men where I've clearly been a sex object in their eyes, and they've gotten nowhere with me. You know, I've been out, and you know how I dress. You know me. Do I look anywhere near thug?
No.
There are white men that are roll up to me like, ooh, you know, you got a nice rough look about you. I'm like, rough? It's like, you know, I'm like, what does that mean? And then basically they're basically trying to say, you know,
you're not in that corner. Push you in that.
Yeah, or even when I was back in school, you know, and I'd be out and about during my wild days and, you know,
holding around.
Hoeing, yes, you know, being as sex positive.
You were thotting around.
Yes, I was thotting before it was a thing. And so, and there would be like, especially older white men that would walk up to me and be like, where are you from? And I'm like, Ohio. They'd be like, oh, I thought you were from Detroit. And they were just disappointed because they either had in their mind that all the black men they encountered from Detroit were basically thuggish.
Okay.
And would fuck them a certain way, or they just had this fantasy that they needed me to comply with. And because I wasn't from Detroit, you know, I think maybe some of the Detroit boys that were there and were regulars were more willing to play that role, and perhaps they were compensated for it. I don't know, but I was just like, yeah, I'm from Ohio. I don't know nothing about that. And so I would just, on multiple occasions, I got that look of disappointment. Then they found out that I was not from Detroit.
But I mean, people aren't, we're not allowed to be different. We're not allowed to be just, we're cookie cutter versions of each other or something. I don't understand that sometimes.
Well, and I think that's the essence of oppression, racism, name it what you want. You don't get to be who you are. You get to be who they want you to be, is what it comes down to. And, you know, I think you can call it, you know, some people would say, oh, you're overreacting and this is just the market and it dictates what it wants. And it's just like, you know, 45 and this whole America First, you know, thing that's going on. It's like, okay, we want our porn and we want it the way we want it. It needs to serve our interests first because we are the largest, you know, we spend the most money, we want it our way. and it's just like, okay, if you say so, you know. But yeah, I'd be curious to find out how many of these studios are black owned. It would be interesting to do an interview with any of the folks that are heading black-owned studios, to find out how they negotiate that and whether they have to make a very clear decision and draw a line in the sand about this is how we straddle this fence between catering to our market but also staying, keeping the doors open. So,
and yeah, probably talk about the difficulties they have. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you know, if budget's a thing, and you know, I'm just curious, you know.
Yeah, because I mean, it has to be. I mean, this is not like the VHS days. This is streaming, where you have just whole big ass websites with server farms that are just pumping out content that they did not create, and they're doing it for free. And it's easy to jack somebody's shit and just put it out there. And so the profit margin has to be really slim. And so I do wonder, even for a black-owned studio, I think there have to be some out there, how much pressure is on them to produce the content that they want to, but also to produce content that's going to keep the bills paid.
Yeah, and keep the actors coming, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they can make a decent amount of money and stick around. And
mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, you know, the actors, they, if they're not diversifying, you know, with escorting and club appearances and dancing and all that, you know, they're missing the boat. I mean, that's basically how that works, apparently.
Okay.
And also, speaking of folks, there was one of my favorite porn stars that retired not too long ago. And I just saw him driving yesterday or day before. I think maybe Wednesday.
Who was this?
His name is Rusty McMahon. He's like this kind of like Daddy Bear kind of deal. Okay. And he's he just recently retired, and I could have sworn I saw him driving a Mercedes and making a left turn in front of me. Because I was like, is that... Okay. You know, I said, I think that is him. So it was just very interesting, because I think he's retired from the sex work business altogether, I think. Because I know he was supplementing driving for Uber, because he was based in Vegas. Yeah, child. You know, because I mean, I guess, well, he's a specific type, you know, and I just, his personality was hilarious to me. And so he would do work for different studios that were in his niche, and he was also an escort, and I think, you know, business was slow because he wasn't doing scenes every week, you know.
Okay. Yeah. So you gotta keep those bills, keep those lights out.
Yeah, he was driving for Uber, and I think he stopped driving for them, and I think he went to Lyft or something like that. It was quite interesting, because we were like Facebook friends, and you know, and so I was like, wait, why are you driving so and so? He's like, hey, bills, you know. I just said, okay. So, you know, I was like, well, that little scene you did, the little Christmas one, was fun. It was, you know, he's like, oh, thank you. You know, it was always very interesting kind of interacting with him. He's just a funny guy. He's hilarious. And so I learned about him through a good friend of mine who, I think when Rusty lived in, he lived in West Hollywood, and he lived near my friend, and my friend was like, if I ever catch him on a bus stop, it's on. Cause they would flirt online, but he could never quite get him. And I was like, well, baby, you got to pay him. And he's like, not always. And so, you know, I mean, he was like, if I see him at a bus stop, it's on. So I don't know if they ever connected, but yeah, it was wild. I was just like, ooh, child. And that friend knows who they are, so I'm not naming names.
But you're not authorized to tell the story.
Probably, I don't think he'd care, but yeah, it's not appropriate. I didn't get authorization to share that name, but yeah, it was like, I said, oh, okay. And I was like, who is this man? And then I looked, I was like, okay, I see it. It's just like, as soon as I saw, like, I was like, yeah. Looking at him and looking at your husband, I see it. Yeah, I get it. So, yeah. So, any of you that know me probably know who I'm talking about. So, But yeah, so I think we should probably move on into our letters because we're over an hour.
We shall. I think so.
We failed miserably. Hopefully this conversation was interesting.
But I think we should try to find someone to interview, though. I think we really should. Either a porn star or a porn owner of a company, something.
I agree. And now that we've actually, I think we put our big boy drawers on and we're actually going to start actively looking for guests. So, if you're interested in coming on the show, drop us a line, sexualhealingpod@gmail.com. And that could be if you have something you want to discuss on the show, there's a topic you'd like us to discuss, or just to supplement some information, because we will typically revisit topics. I think this is the second time we've talked about, porn, so yeah. So we welcome you to slide on into our inbox with some information. And of course, like and subscribe and share us with a friend. So we'll slide on into our next. Did you have a closing statement on this segment, actually, Dark Boy, before we move on?
I think every time we have these topics, we always want to do more. So I think just what you just we said, that trying to interview, we need to look into interviewing porn stars, either current or retired, or owners of the company. So I think that's how we continue the conversation.
Okay. And I think also it would be interesting to reach out, although that's a slightly different subject. There's a brother out there that has a website called Sexual Racism Sucks. Okay. And I believe you have met him before. I've not met him, but I've read some of his work, because he's also a novelist. And so, so it might be interesting to kind of engage him to have that conversation about, when do you cross the line from this is who you're attracted to and who you prefer to engage for sex, as opposed to when does it cross the line from preference into racism, and is there a line? And I don't know if racism is even the right word. I think because you have that power element, because certainly as men of various colors, we have the right to say no to people that we don't want to be bothered with either. So it's like, is racism the right word, or is it discrimination, or is it purely preference? But I think we're going to get into that to a certain extent in our next episode, so I'll be quiet and just move us forward. But were you done? I can't remember if I interrupted you.
That was it.
Alrighty. Yeah, I'm not quite right yet today. I'm getting there, but Alrighty, so we'll move into Ask Your Brista, and we have a letter today from, do I have a name for her? This is Miss Katie.
Okay.
Yeah, Miss Katie. Okay, so she says that she's been in a relationship for 3 years, and she's been living with him for the last 2 years. He is 10 years her senior. Okay. Miss Katie is 42. So I'm guessing he's 52.
52, yeah.
Yes. So at the beginning of the relationship, she writes, he used to be incredibly polite, loving, giving, and was just a wonderful guy. Nowadays, he just treats me like part of the scenery. He doesn't ever say please when he asks for anything. He makes demands. He doesn't say thank you if I do something for him. And when he's wrong, he never apologizes. And like when we're in the kitchen or in other places, he'll just like open doors onto me and hurting me. And it doesn't look like he cares at all.
Like cabinet doors she's talking about?
It sounds like cabinet doors, refrigerator doors. Yeah. And so it just, he doesn't care. He's like injuring her in different ways. So she said that he goes into, he has his little rage fits, and when she does question him about stuff like that, and I guess other things in the relationship, and just tells her to get the fuck out. and get out of his face. And
wow.
Yeah. And so she says he drinks a lot more nowadays than he used to when they first met. They argue a lot. And she's like, I know I'm not perfect and I'm the more sensitive type, but she would hope to, you know, she expects a base level of respect from him. And, you know, she's tried having conversations with him, and he basically has shut her down and, you know, get the fuck out of my face, and you talk too much, you're too sensitive, all these different things. Wow. And
this is horrible.
And apparently between the two of them, they have 5 dogs, and he basically mistreats her dogs. She has 2 of them, and he shows a clear preference toward his 3 dogs. So she wants to know what she should do.
What is there to do besides?
You tell her.
I mean, breaking up. I mean, you've already tried to talk to him and it doesn't work. He's, mm-hmm. He's opening cabinets in your face, doors in your face, hurting your dog, hurting mm-hmm. you. What, I mean, why is there even a question?
I don't know.
You gotta leave this guy. I mean, I don't know if he moved into your house or your apartment or whatever, or you moved in with him, but, this isn't gonna work. It would be tough enough if mm-hmm. you had never talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're trying to tell somebody that they're not treating you right, but you've already tried to talk to him and that did not work. He doesn't take it seriously. He says you're too sensitive. And you say you're not perfect. Well, no one's perfect. But this almost just sounds too much to try to overcome, I think. Mm-hmm. If something happened, like, I don't know, he had a family tragedy or, I don't know, something happened at his job, it's still not enough to justify this behavior. You know, I could see people being upset, being down, being angry, maybe being, you know, wanting to be alone, maybe just not being themselves, but this sounds abusive to me.
Mm-hmm.
And to your dog, your 2 dogs. I mean, he happens to be mistreating the 2 dogs that are yours.
Mm-hmm.
It's something. This one, I mean, I sound like the read, but yeah, you need to break up with him.
Yeah, I concur. First of all, Katie, sweetie, leave him. That's yeah. Now, if you don't have the resources to leave him and move into your own place, what I suggest you do is you call your local domestic violence agency and see what resources are available to you to get out of there. If it's, because, you know, I don't know if he's at that point where if you try to leave him, he would get particularly violent. You don't say that, but clearly the violence is escalating. It's going from verbal and emotional abuse now to physical. Although he hasn't put his hands on you yet.
Yeah, but where's it going to go from this point?
Yeah, that's the only place it can go, you know. Or he's gonna escalate that where he's, you know, opening cabinet doors and bathroom doors and things like that a little more harder. But call your local domestic violence resource agency. Find out what things are available to you. Also, particularly if your lease is now month to month, it sounds like you guys are probably in an apartment. I don't know. I just get that feeling. Okay. If you're now month to month, you need to prepare to roll out at the end of the month or whenever is clever. You can't do all this yourself because you may need to make a quick one-day move. I don't know.
That's how I was going to say. You got to do it. Yeah, this has got to be. You got to swoop in and get out.
Yeah, so round up your crew and your tribe and let them know, hey, I need to go. This is what's going on. You tell them as much. Oh, excuse me. Tell them as much or as little as you want to tell them. But I think if you're going to have people come into this environment, there is a risk that they're taking in being there.
So, to me, they have to know.
They need to know.
I think they have to know. Yeah.
So maybe you only select people to help you that you want to know this, or you can handle them knowing. But I also say you need to have your committee present in case shit does get funky. Because you're going to need someone there to call the police if he does put his hands on you, or if he puts his hands on anyone else. Because obviously if the police come, then they will basically detain him, if not take him in, but they'll detain him until you can get your shit and go. And actually, truth be told, you may start documenting the bruises and things like that from the doors and all that. Perhaps even, you know, record some of the stuff, like when you sit down and try to talk to him about his behavior. You know, maybe he gets the message that time, but at the very least you have it on record that he's doing these things and this is how he's responding and he's reacting. You document all of your injuries with your phone, and then you take all that shit to the police and say, "Hi, I need to move." They will come by and you know, run interference, whether it's for you or for you and your crew. Or they will just come out and arrest his ass and say, "Okay, you know, we can hold him for 72 hours or whatever. Get your shit. Go." You know, so if you have the means to move into your own place or to move with somebody, or if you have to go into a shelter, so be it. Get away from him. Because eventually, you know, the drinking and all that, it only intensifies who he is and what he's going to do. And, you know, there's something going on with him where he's sliding off the cliff. Don't know what that is, but he's sliding off the cliff.
Yeah.
So you don't need to be there to witness that. You've seen enough.
Or be dragged down with him.
Exactly. You know, don't let this man destroy you, because that's what he's trying to do at this point. And whether it's hurt people, or he's just a fucking monster. Either way, get the hell away from him. And I hope I've given you enough info, but the best advice I can give you is call a local domestic violence agency. They have checklists on all the shit you need to make sure you got when you leave. They can run interference for you. They can go to court with you to get a restraining order. They can do a lot of stuff. Okay? They can either help you through it, hold your hand, or give you the guidance on how to do these things. But get the hell away from him. Truly. Beloved. I'm giving you my Ianla. Not on my watch. Get up out of there. Yeah, Katie, you got to go, sweetheart. There's no fixing this. And he's going to come back, you know, reformed and all that. Fuck that. There's no. Whether you love him or not, you got to love him enough to be like, "Oh, I see you," and love yourself enough to be like, "I'm choosing me and my safety over you." Okay? Now, he's probably broken you down on some levels, because just the fact that you put all this in writing and put it, you know, and sent it, it's like, "Oh, girl, you didn't read this and recognize that, oh, maybe I..." So clearly, there's some harm he's done to you already. Don't let him do any more. And start rebuilding yourself, because he has torn you down in ways that you probably don't even realize right now. And there's no shame in that at all. You stay with him because you loved him and you thought that this could work. It's not working, and it's not going to work. And even if he gets sober and everything else, shit ain't going to work. Can you really look at him and trust that when he goes to stroke your hair or the side of your face that he's not going to slap the shit out of you? Because if you can't trust that, you can't be with him. You know.
Yeah. And the other thing that I wanted to add, I think if you move out, I hope you do, I think at the same time you unfriend him on all social media.
And block
him. Either block his number or his phone number so you don't see his text messages or you don't get his calls or you change your number or something. You can't. I think you have to have a complete complete separation from this guy. Mm-hmm. That's just my, you know, my opinion, because I keep hearing these stories where we broke up, but he still bothered me on social media, or he's still doing this, or just, I think.
No, your mutual just, friend sharing your information with him.
Yeah. And ask them to unfriend him, too, if, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think you really, it's not just leaving him. It may also be leaving some of your mutual friends alone. They're part of the package.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And I know that can be painful. But if there's not a certain amount of loyalty to you where they're willing and able to keep your life separate from his, because there's nothing saying they can't continue to be in relationship with him, that's fine. But he can't know none of your business. And if they can't maintain that appropriate barrier, then they gotta go.
Yeah.
They've gotta go. So, Katie, sweetie, please get up out of there. Make some calls. Get your plan in motion. Understand what it is you need to do. Stay away from him if you're still in the house with him. You know, as best you can, avoid contact with him. And just, you know, we're going to wish you safety and pray for you, sweetie. Get away from this motherfucker now. But okay. All a little heavy, but hey.
Yeah.
Oppression is oppression.
It is.
Mm-hmm. So how are we helping a brother out today?
Well, this time, this might be a little heavy. Well, not heavy, but it's kind of a, it has an escape sort of thing to it also, this question from Daniel.
Okay.
So Daniel has a friend in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Who I want to leave me alone. He thinks he's my best friend, but he isn't. I tried being friends with him for a few months, but I found myself always annoyed at his aggressive, brash, clingy, and rude personality. I've stopped communicating with him, but he hasn't gotten the hint. He keeps calling and texting me anyway. He has even signed up for some of the same college courses that I'm in now. And he also ended up getting a job at the same place I work. Help. I can't seem to escape. I cannot seem to escape from this guy. What can I do to get him away from me? I feel like I am being stalked.
Ooh.
So it's another one that needs to escape, but how does he escape?
Yeah, this one's a little tougher. You know, because really, until he does something, I have to think that the university policies don't really kick in to protect you very well.
It doesn't sound like he's done anything to be, like, breaking the rules or illegal or can get him in trouble with the police or authorities or anything. It doesn't sound like that. It's just he's annoying.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he's probably being a little menacing as well. I would say, short of transferring, I mean, hell.
Well, no, I think that's...
I think some things you can do to protect yourself include trying to minimize your contact with him. So if you're working together... Huh? Oh.
No?
Hello, Roscoe. You've now been featured in the show, so
yep.
We need you to go sit down somewhere. I would say try to minimize the alone time you have with this guy. Keep things, if you have to work together, keep things very professional. No personal.
Don't be going
detail.
For any happy hours if it's, you know, whatever. You
exactly.
Know, after work or anything like that. Probably isn't the type of place, but still, just.
Yeah, that, and also don't, you know, as soon as his behavior starts to veer into, you know, inappropriate. Whether you're in class, you know, no study groups with him, just no contact. I mean,
or no interaction, maybe?
Yeah, no interaction. I mean, if he, you know, if he insists upon saying hello, then say hello back and keep it moving. You know, hello, have a good day, and keep it moving. He's gonna get the message, but it sounds like he doesn't want to. You may, in fact, be being stalked by this guy, and if that's the case, again, go talk to I would imagine your dean of student life, or VP of student affairs, because there are protocols in place on, there should be, on every campus to deal with this kind of thing. At the very least, they can track his behavior, so to speak. It's like, why are you taking this class? You don't need it. And you've taken all these classes that this guy is taking that aren't part of your major. Why do you keep taking them? He left his job and got another one, and here you come getting a job here too. You know, you can try to establish a pattern where it can at least be documented, so if it does get out of hand, and I hate that things like this with stalking, you have to be harmed in some way, or they have to damage your property, and you have proof that it's them. I hate that that is the case, that law enforcement really can't do anything until...
Yeah, right now he's being annoying.
Yeah, he's being a pain in the ass. And, you know, I don't really advocate having your boys talk to him, because that can escalate things. From where he's being a bugaboo to being violent. You don't want that either. So...
Does he have a mutual, like, that you are friends with Daniel, that maybe can kind of talk to him on your behalf? I don't know. That might be, because I think he's going to have to hear it from somebody else that's not you.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, I mean, that's all, maybe a friend, an actual really true friend that he has, maybe what gets the message to him, through to him, you know?
Quite possibly. Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be something worth considering, because oftentimes abusers like this, they don't get the message from you. They'll get it coming through a third party, because now it's not just your word against theirs, so to speak. And they can kind of play these games. Oh, well, I didn't do so and so. It's like, no, you did. They played the tape for me, you know, and I'm just letting you know that what you're doing is not cool. What's that about? Do we need to get you some help? What's the deal? So the more people that, Daniel, that you can get involved in this, in certain ways, not having everybody in your business, but just the more people you can get involved in this will help you to keep him accountable, to stay away from you. And it sounds like, I mean, this is a guy that just thinks he's your best friend, as opposed to you guys don't have a relationship that was intimate.
Well, they did try. Daniel tried.
Oh, Daniel tried. Okay.
So, yeah, he did try. He said, I tried to be friends with him for a few months.
But
he just couldn't take this guy's personality.
Okay. So was it just friends, or was it also romantic? That's what I'm trying to get at.
No, just friends.
Okay. Yeah. So he crazy. Yeah. He's a little crazy. he's crying out for something.
Well, I have a feeling that being this clingy, I have a feeling that he may not have many friends.
Mm-hmm.
He may not have very many friends, and he's trying to hang on to the one he thinks he has. Mm-hmm. His personality may be turning everybody off. Mm-hmm. So, it's possible that my suggestion of having a mutual friend might not even work, because if he doesn't have friends, it's not going to work, but... I don't know. I don't think you're the only one that feels. And I feel bad, because I think the guy probably doesn't know what he's doing. If what I'm saying is true, he doesn't have any other. That he may not have any other friends. He probably doesn't know what he's doing that's turning everybody off.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing I can recommend to you, Daniel, is take a look at the book Nonviolent Communication by Rosenberg. I can't remember his first name. But there is a very clear way of speaking in this modality that it's not it's not this thing of like, oh, you know, you just drive me crazy. It's not that. It's like when you do this behavior, I feel this way in response, and then you make a very specific request of them. And you can basically just lay it all out. Like, when you do this, I feel this way, and I really don't want to be in relationship with you. When you do this, I feel this way. And it, again, reinforces that I do not want to be in relationship with you. You know, and you can say, these are characteristics I'm not looking for in a friend. And unfortunately, you possess them. You know, so if the guy is just really kind of dense and thick and doesn't realize it, like for him, he's just stepping it up because he thinks you're really cool. You know, or he's interested in you. Either, whatever it is, he thinks you are a wonderful thing, and he wants a piece. You got to let him know that this is how you're experiencing him. And he may think that he's being really cool and really warm and welcoming, but you're like, no, you're traumatizing me. So, I mean, if Dark Boy...
You should feel
stocked. Yeah, I mean, if Dark Boy's, you know, idea there is correct, you might need to teach him that, hey, this is how you're being experienced, and this is probably why you don't have a lot of people in your life, and I can't be one of them because there's been too much damage done here. So I need
I should
you to
laugh, but
yeah, but I need you to grow from this and find somebody else to bother. I mean, if it is that, if you even can be concerned, you know, be like, look, I cannot be friends with you. It's not something comfortable to me. However it is, you have to communicate that to him. And, you know, I hate that you're being stalked in this way. It really sucks. And unfortunately, the way that stuff is, you know. But yeah, start getting a record, a preponderance of evidence against him, because eventually other people are going to have to intervene. And so you want to have the evidence for that. So that's all I got.
Yep, me too.
Okay.
All right. So if you want to send your questions to us for either ask your brother or help a brother out,
mm-hmm.
send them to sexualhealingpod@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Pookie will now run down the social media stuff.
Yes, and I often neglect to mention that if you want to retain a certain amount of anonymity and send a letter, you can go to our website, sexualhealingpod.com, and submit a comment in the right side of the screen. You'll see it. You just got to answer a question showing that you're a person, that you can send your message that way.
Yeah.
And I believe that they allow you to submit that. And, you know, we're not going to... I think you may have to put your email address, but, you know, we're not using it.
You could always say what name you want to use.
Yeah.
Want us to use.
Yeah, just, you know, let us know how to work that. But, yeah, we are on social media. We're hoping to be a little more active soon. We've been crushed for time lately. But you can find us on Twitter at PodSexual. You can find us on Instagram at Sexual Healing Pod. And you can also find us on Facebook at Sexual Healing : from top to bottom. and also, if you're listening to the show, please use the hashtag Sexual Healing. And also the hashtag, my goodness, Pods by QPOC, which stands for Pods by Queer People of Color, which is a really cool hashtag developed by one of our fellow podcasters, Trilificent. And you can also, if you want to find more content like ours or by Queer People of Color, you can also go to podsbyqpoc.com and search a directory there and get a little intro to some of the shows. So, all right. Do we have a closing word from you today, Dark Boy?
Just my usual. Mm-hmm. Be good to yourself. Be good to everybody else.
All right. be a blessing, not a curse in this world, y'all. All righty. Yeah. So looking ahead, the election is coming up. Please, please, please vote. We just had a monster confirmed to the Supreme Court yesterday.
Travesty. That was
just, it got my pressure up. And so, yeah, I don't know if it was yesterday or today, but he's there now. And so,
oh, it was yesterday.
Yeah. The 2016 election was not just about who our president was or is. It's also about a lot of judges being confirmed to the bench. We now have a conservative Supreme Court, which could be devastating. To a lot of people. You know, we don't really know exactly what they're going to do, but the tide of the world changing and becoming more open and accepting in various ways, our Supreme Court is not going to reflect that, which means that our federal laws may not reflect that reality. So,
and I'm telling you, I need Ruth Bader Ginsburg to hang on. I know she's, 84?
Yeah.
Hang on,
sister. I mean, she works out.
There's no... Yeah, yeah.
She got a trainer. But
there's no excuse to stay home.
Yeah.
I know people in 2016, they really weren't feeling Hillary. And there was this idea, well, she's going to win anyway. I could stay home. Well, look what happened. So
yeah,
this time...
she didn't win.
Get out. Yeah. And vote.
I think a lot of podcasters are like, hey, don't forget to register. And also, you know... if you have transportation and you know that your neighbors may not, you know, check in with them, make sure they're registered to vote, and then maybe take your neighbors to the polling station that day. You know, consider doing...
that's a good idea.
Consider doing a little shuttle. Go on the app next door and say, hey, because it's set up by neighborhood, and say, hey, if you need a ride to the poll to vote, I am going to this polling station... between, you know, for this time, like I have a half hour to take people and get them back home, or I'm going to be doing this for an hour. You know, if you're able to do that evening, go on an app like Nextdoor.com or Nextdoor. Download that, install it, sign into your neighborhood, and just kind of put that up there and just... help people that maybe wouldn't vote. I mean, hell, you could post a reminder once a week or once a day. Don't forget to register to vote. The deadline to register is, which I think is coming up very soon. But yeah, so just, this is a democracy, and I don't know if you realize it, but it is slowly eroding, and and it could become an authoritarian state, you know, if our Congress is not shifted with this next election cycle, and our Senate has not shifted, we could be in a world of trouble, y'all. So, because they are not checking this man in Oval Office at all. They don't like what he says, but they keep voting with him. So I don't care if they don't like what he says. That's bullshit. Y'all keep voting for his agenda. So that's all I'm gonna say. You know, we've run a little long today, but I felt like this was important. So...
Yeah,
I believe Dark Boy concurs. So, again, you know, civic duty. It is a duty. Please register to vote and vote. It is coming next month. All right. So, excuse me. We are signing off, and we will chat with y'all next week. Be good, y'all.
Yes, until next time.
Until next time. Drop all them dimes. All right.